Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Kitchen Sports City. We have a premier show going on. Let's go. Common man, the calling number is 425-292-4444. You got the next 60 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with the chefs. This is a premier show, Sports City, so I'm comfortable. I'm happy to introduce a new face into the building. We have our first female co-host, Erin, in the building. Erin, welcome to the kitchen. How are you feeling this evening?
Hey, I'm feeling great. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here, and let's get this show rolling.
Okay, so I have to introduce you to everybody. So, Sports City, before I do the introductory, and I kind of want her to delve into everything that we will be covering from here on out, she's into all of the major sports. She's into the fight game also. I do have a little problem with her because she is a Patriot fan, so she's glowing right now out of what's been going on for the past 6 weeks.
Of course.
Right. And what happened last night, and this is kind of like redemption for the past, I don't know, let's just say 12 years. A lot of people in this area have been talking a little crap about the two times that they won in the Super Bowl. But nevertheless, the old reliable Mr. Brady is doing his thing. But I'll let her delve into things and, kind of introduce herself to everybody. So, like, you can tell people your comfort zones or what sports you like and what we'll be talking about from here on out. Knowing that you're into the fight game, that's intriguing in itself, but the floor is yours, Erin.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm just happy to be here. I'm a big sports fan my whole life. As you mentioned, my main team, the Patriots, live for those games. Longtime fan, not a fair weather fan. Back to when the Bledsoe Parcells days, I was rooting for them, and I am a University of Michigan graduate, proud of it, as we all are, and Tom Brady happened to be the first person, no joke, along with Lloyd Carr in an elevator that I spoke to, my first ever visit on campus in Michigan, and needless to say, from that day on, I've only grown to love the team even more. But it doesn't just stop with football. I'm kind of new to the fight game. As you guys will get to know, I'll be able to give y'all some personal insight on a lot of things, a lot of fun things, good stories, just from some personal relationships I've developed in there. I myself am a former tennis player, tennis coach. You name it, I've probably done it. Field hockey. I started the first girls ice hockey team in Connecticut, so a big NHL fan, a lot of respect for hockey players. Ty, I could keep going, but I think they get the idea, and they'll get to know more as we keep going.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. Hey, I let her do the talking for herself. I mean, I get the window shop. I get to see it from a distance, and a lot of times she gives me a lot of crap about my boys being the Lions, but nevertheless, I can't really talk too much junk, but we did get to beat them last year, but that's okay. I get to run away with that one. For now, hopefully we can see them.
Which,
in the
as you know, you know. Hey, you know, I, that one was, it's always tough to swallow a Patriots loss, and I know, you know, everyone acts like the world's ending, but being a Michigan girl, I can't help have a soft spot for Detroit, as you know, so I like to look at it more as we just, I don't want to say a charity game, but you have to lose one every once in a while, so.
See, that's what I'm talking
but
about.
But as typical Lions, they didn't do much with it, unfortunately.
that's a startup season with Patricia. Patricia just got there. Everything's anew. This is the second season, and off to an interesting start. We got a big game this Monday night, which I'm supremely nervous about. I'm really nervous about this game Monday night, and we'll probably be covering. And I probably have to get your thoughts and opinions on this week's games too, unless you stop around Sunday. But we'll see. We'll see how the show progresses. But I know that there was something that I wanted to get to and trying to address to you, and I'll get to that, and I'll let you start addressing things here in the kitchen. First and foremost, since we are on that page of talking about the Patriots, your thoughts on the game last night up against the New York Giants, in which they won the matchup 35-14. And before the game had started, we had a show Wednesday night, the cookout, and we were talking about how the game would go down. I was nervous about it because they said it would be raining. It rained before the game. It didn't rain during the game, and the spread was 17-point spread in favor of the Patriots. It just looked fishy because there's been games, especially up against the Jets. They gave the Jets 23 points, and the Patriots got out to a 30-0 lead. They pulled Brady, and they usually don't pull Brady. I thought that this situation would present itself. They didn't. The Giants made it a game. And Brady stayed in there, and they ended up covering not only the spread, but the overcoming in the play. And I don't want to talk over, under, or spread to anything, but this is how we went at it in the show of the cookout, and where I was like saying, who wins and why? And then I had one of the co-hosts say, well, no, just make it interesting because everybody's going to say the Patriots. So say who wins with the spread or without the spread. And I said Giants because I didn't think that – I thought something was fishy about it, but the Patriots did their job. Won by 21, pushed it over because the over-under was 41. It ended up covering 49. But your thoughts on the game and, ultimately the play of the Patriots, and if you are somewhat impressed with Daniel Jones, at least as of now, while Eli is on the sideline.
Well, no, I mean, I think you have the nail on the head. I think it wasn't as much a case of who's going to win the game, but what story would come out of the Patriots winning the game. And I kind of was with you with the spread. I know they were favored by about 17. They don't typically cover, if you look back, the huge spreads, as you mentioned with the Jets, they didn't cover that. But I kind of thought that that's the type of end result we'd end up seeing. But the thing that really just came up again for me with the game, other than, the defense did a great job. I think that it was not a surprise to see Brady in there. It was not a surprise to see them really try and put the game away and finish it, even though it was, one score game going into the fourth. You never really got the feeling that the Patriots were going to let that one slip away just because of the history. I think, especially even though he's not on the field, Eli Manning's still in that, number 10 jersey on the sideline. And a lot of Giants had a lot to say all week. I saw, Justin Tuck on, give an interview this week, bringing up those two Super Bowls they all love to bring up. So I think that combined with the fact that Belichick, as we know, loves to kind of put those rookie quarterbacks, especially the ones like Daniel Jones, who were on a little bit of a high and coming in, maybe feeling himself a little bit. And Belichick loves to just knock them back down to earth and then some. So I wasn't surprised to really see them, the defense step up as usual. It's unfortunate they gave up, just as they did the week before, one big play. Otherwise, think about the stat line that side of the team is putting up without those two big plays. But even with it, I didn't really give Daniel Jones much of a chance, and I don't think he stepped up. I think, if anything, he really reminded us all that he is a rookie, he has a lot to learn, and that the team, the Giants as a whole, have a long way to go. But the one thing that really came up for me out of the game, and has been something I've been talking to a lot of people recently, is the weakest part of the Patriots team. And I know the offense is hurting a little bit, but they'll get healthy, they'll get their players back, they always figure that out, is as a Patriots fan, I am terrified that the kicker is going to end up determining our season. And especially an extra point, we can't seem to buy an extra point. I think it was pretty obvious last night. Belichick has no faith in Nugent going for it on fourth down three times. You know, he did make all the extra points, but missed the 40-yard field goal. And I'll admit, you know, we've become spoiled as Patriots fans that those big kicks are something you can bank on. And, you know, it just made me wonder, how big of a deal is it, this kicking issue they have in New England? And just overall, how much of an impact kickers are starting to have on the outcomes of games? You know, you have these guys mentally and physically just putting their bodies on the line and really risking themselves day in and day out. And it just seems, maybe it's me, more and more lately, like big games and big moments are really being determined by kickers, both good and bad. And it, you just wonder, is it becoming too prominent of a role they're playing? But like I said, with the underlying issue being, is the kicking issue going to come back to really bite the Patriots?
And it's pretty much interesting to look at the game the way that you're saying it, because I feel the same exact way that now that they made them move 15 yards back, but not only did they make them move 15 yards back on the extra point, they make it interesting to put them on either the left or the right hash. I wonder if it's something that the team picks or the referee picks, but it's interesting that now they miss more kicks than ever. They make the game more interesting and makes it competitive at the end of the day, because one of my friends that I spoke with, I want to say right when they made that rule that they're going to push the extra point back, that said he stopped watching football when I think around the Buffalo Bills, New York Giants Super Bowl, because everything came down to the kicker, like you're saying, when Longwood had missed the kick and the Giants ended up winning that Super Bowl back in 91. Then you start thinking of the history of the kicker. It's always something interesting that happens where everybody's biting their nails, everybody's on one knee hoping that something happens. If they miss, you know, the game was on the line, or if they make it, it's like it's a sure thing, and it's nothing too much that the special teams or the defense could do but just watch the way or sway of the kick go down. And these are million-dollar paid athletes being the kicker, where when it's practice, all they do is kick the ball. They don't run. They don't, you know, tackle. They don't do anything.
Some of these big kicks, sorry to interrupt, but if you look at some of these historically and even this year and recently, big kicks that are missed are things, like you said, that should be gimmies or automatic. You know, they're not long field goals. Even, you know, a couple weeks ago, regular season game in Tampa Bay, Jameis Winston has perhaps the drive of his career leading his team back down the field, and you know, the field goal was, I think, 34 yards, that of an extra point, and wasn't even close. And in a division where it's close, you know, I know New Orleans is up at the top, but, you know, that makes a big difference. And it seems like it's not like we're talking about 55, 50-yard plus field goals either. These are things, as you said, these guys are paid millions of dollars. And I understand all of the elements and all of the intangibles that we're not bringing up, but just now that I have a son that plays football, and I'm thinking about what he puts himself through physically, and just that how much rides on the weight of these guys' feet, and it really, I can't imagine being a player on the sideline.
Especially when you're on the offense, you did everything that you could do. And it's a fourth down, and let's just say it's 40 seconds on the clock. They're down two. They need the field goal to go through to win the game by one. And let's just say you're offensive lineman, and there's nothing you can do. You did everything that you could do to help Dolphins get down there, and the kicker lines up, and he gets ready to kick the ball, and he misses. And it's like, man, we did everything right.
And
the whole crowd goes, Right. Like, you know, and the crazy thing you want to yell and scream at the kicker. You know, the kicker has the weight of the world on his shoulders. He wants to apologize to every other 52 player on the team and on the roster, but, you know, there's no way that he can get it back. He's hoping that the offense can get them, or the defense can get the ball back. The offense can get them down there again and him try to redeem himself. But you are correct. I really feel the same way that a lot of these games are swayed on the kicker.
The thing too is, like, you know, after the game, the typical, oh, this is on me, it's my fault, I let my team down. And again, I'm an athlete, I'm a coach, so I, you know, you win as a team, you lose it as a team. But really, once you get a couple days past that game and you look back historically, again, it's not the kicker that takes the fall. It's not the kicker that it really comes back on. It's, oh, here's another game Jameis Winston didn't win, or, you know, coaches are fired over a win here or there. Playoff spots are determined by a win here or there. And ultimately, if it doesn't work out to their advantage, it's not that, oh, 9 months ago you missed a kick, we're releasing you. I understand sometimes that happens, you know, case in point, Chicago, but no, you missed the playoffs again, Bruce Arians, you're fired, or Jameis Winston, we're moving on because you can't win those games. And really, it was because a guy can't make a 30-yard, 4-yard field goal, which he's paid millions of dollars to do. And it seems to me like they're missing more and more. And I you know, that can be a whole nother show on, you know, a different generation and the pressure, and maybe that has a lot to do with it, because we're producing better athletes, so you would think these guys should be getting better and better. And like I said, to me, it seems like they're getting, you know, teams would rather have a guy who's almost old enough to be my dad and Adam Vinatieri than try some of these younger kickers with big legs, because mentally they can't make a 30-yard kick in September.
Right. Well, see, More than ever, you're right. Any young kicker that I think is more the pressure, and knowing that they impress a lot of these teams when they're in the combine and, you know, pro days and kicking 60-yarders, but then when they get in front
of
the
camera, trainer and their, you know, their personal ball polisher and all of that, where they're set up to make it, you know.
Right, like what the Aguayo brothers. I don't know if you know who they are, but they were two kickers down in Florida State, and this was recent. I want to say within a 5-year realm. One of the Aguayo brothers was not, he didn't miss a kick at all while he was in college, and I think he was the kicker on the national championship Florida State team with Jameis Winston. As soon as he gets into the league, he's missing kicks left and right. They get him out of Tampa Bay. They send him to, like, Chicago. He couldn't make a kick in Chicago. You never heard from him again. His brother gets into the league, and the same thing happens. He starts missing kicks, and he's not playing football. It was like both of these guys were studs in college, and then next, you know, they get into the league, they can't do anything anymore. And I'm wondering if it's just the pressure, or knowing how much is on the line, or if it really is, you know, at the end all
the
be
scary
all.
Scary guys coming at
people.
Them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
so,
then
so
you have, you know. Sorry, not to interrupt, but I was saying, you know, and then now you have talks of women coming out to kick and all of that, and it's I'm all for it. I think whoever's the best kicker at the end of the day, and if you can make a 50-yard field goal, it doesn't matter what kind of body that foot's attached to. But it almost seems like it's become a character or something, and the topic of discussion in a way that, you know, you don't want to be, it doesn't seem like they're football players. It's almost like it separates them as a different part, and they have a different set of rules, and all of that's great until you realize that they're the ones ultimately determining a lot of these games that these athletes are paid millions of dollars and coaches are paid millions of dollars to win. And, you know, it's just interesting.
Okay, so let me get away from that kicker talk, because I know we can keep going and doing this all day long. I know you have something
Absolutely.
You want to address, and I'll let you start throwing stuff at me, and I'll try to respond as best as possible and eat every dish you put out there, and I'll throw some stuff back at you.
Well, I hope you're hungry.
Mm-hmm. You know me.
Yeah, well, that's why I thought I pulled back a little bit with on the kicker thing, because like you said, I know we could go on and on, but I agree. We've spent more than enough time on the kicker topic.
Okay, so give me a topic that you would like to address. I know there were several that you talked about before we got here, and I'll try and answer the best that I can.
Well, first of all, I'm just curious. We haven't had a chance to talk. I do want to get your take on the Lions game this week, just because I do think that's the toughest division in football. far and away, top to bottom. And for some reason, no matter what, you know, the Lions just cannot seem to get, they can have the same record as the other teams, but they just can't seem to get that respect yet. And I was just curious your thoughts on the game, if you thought they were going to win, and what a win would mean. And let's hear it.
Look at her coming into this kitchen with, like, habanero, jalapeno.
Going
like,
right to your fave, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It's worth it. Everybody
right
that's here in that kitchen. Right, right. I don't, they know I don't like to talk about my boys, but I got to, because this is a premiere show.
I had to do it.
No, goodness. I'm ultimately nervous about the game, and I feel like this is a tough scenario for the Lions. As good as they've been playing this season, I mean, the one thing that, you know, was a hiccup was the start of the season up against Arizona, where they had a 3-possession lead in the fourth quarter and ended up tying, where it almost looked like they could have lost that game in overtime with Arizona scoring in overtime. But they've been playing well. They came out of the gate and won up against the Chargers, and then they went to Philadelphia and beat the Eagles. And then they ended up losing recently up against the Chiefs in a nail-biting type of game in the last possession, where it ended up being a Hail Mary that sealed the fate. And a lot of people didn't see that pass interference call at the end of the game, but they didn't call it. And I don't want to leave it hung up on the referees, where a lot of this stuff does end up happening. But the reason why I'm nervous about this game is the Lions, interesting enough, have a four-game winning streak up against the Packers. I can't even remember the last time that they had this much of a run on the Packers. And the reason why I introduced that is because I think almost every time in these past four games, either Rodgers was hurt or he got hurt in the midst of the game. So the Lions were able to take advantage of the situation. It's tough on the Lions because I don't think that they can go in the Lambeau and have a five-game winning streak. So I think this is a different team. Patricia has a team buying into the whole system. I don't like to say the Patriot way, but I feel like everything that he's pulled, and he's brought a lot of former Patriots with him, and it's been working, and they've been successful up until this point. But this is their first division game going up against the Packers, knowing that Rodgers doesn't really have any of the pieces that he used to have, but it's him. He's old, reliable, and as long as you're wearing a green jersey with a yellow helmet, he's going to make the play. He still has Jimmy Graham, one of the better tight ends in the league, 6'8" target, that if he gets it up in the air, I mean, it's a mismatch for a lot of safeties or people in the secondary in general to deal with. But legitimately, I feel like the Lions do have a shot to make this happen. I just feel like this is a big uphill battle, knowing that the Packers are trying to redeem themselves from the loss that they've taken recently up against Detroit, and try to make a name for themselves while they don't have the Randall Cobbs, they don't have the Jordy Nelsons, they don't have, you know, the notable players, and Devontae Adams may be out. They're saying it's questionable. So him being out would be another.
I heard he was back. Okay.
So you heard he's good or he's out?
I heard he was playing.
Okay, so if he's in.
That makes a big difference, and I think that shows how important this game is to both teams.
Right, because it's a division game, and it really – I mean, it's a one-game thing, but in the division it counts as two. So, now, to be honest, this game is for first place. Whoever wins is in sole possession of first place, even though the Lions, if they won, they would have one less win than the Packers, but they have one loss in the loss column. So whoever wins this game is in sole possession of first place in the NFC North, where, to be brutally honest, I'm saying this is one of the better divisions in football right now, being the NFC North. So this would be impressive.
I argue to find a better one. I think hands down the best division. I know the Bears went stunk it up across the pond last week, but
the NFC West makes this an interesting debate, because the only team suffering is the Arizona Cardinals, which I feel real bad because Larry Fitzgerald doesn't deserve to go out of the league like this. And last year, while we were in the kitchen, I was just like, the Cardinals need to play better, because I don't want to see a legend like this, a great player, go out and they only win like two or three wins on the season and lose. And they're already off to the same situation. They won their first game up against Cincinnati this past weekend, but it's looking like the same thing could potentially happen. But the How do I start it? The Niners are undefeated. The Seahawks are 4-1, and the Rams, I mean, they just were in the Super Bowl, and you know enough about the Los Angeles Rams, too. So
I sure do, and I know enough to know that they are heading in the wrong direction. I think they'll get things together, but you certainly can't look at them as a serious contender until they work out some stuff out west. But I think you kind of answered your own question, though. I understand, as you mentioned earlier, the Lions absolutely gift-wrapped a tie, handed it over, and I don't know if they wanted to make it easy on Kyler and company, you know, their first week, but that should have been a win, no excuses. But the Arizona Cardinals are the reason that I don't think you can consider that division. They're one of the weakest teams in football. And in the NFC North, I think the only reason at the end of the season their records might not reflect it is because those teams are really going to beat the heck out of each other. And, top to bottom, all those teams could legitimately finish with a winning record in spite of the fact that they all have to play each other twice. So I don't really think there is an argument. I respect your thoughts on the NFC West, but, you know, San Francisco, to me, still has some stuff to prove. I say you can only beat who they put in front of you, and they've sure done a good job. I have no idea what to think of Cleveland, as I think most people are in the same boat. I think Seattle looks legitimate. I would not want to play Seattle right now. I think they're emerging as one of the favorites to come out of the NFC. As you know, I have a vested interest in the Rams, and I do think that they will get things together. But I do think they're going to be suffering and will suffer this year from a little bit of a letdown. I think it's so hard to go to the Super Bowl, come that close, you know, play a close game and lose and not. It takes a really, really, really special team to come back from that and take a step forward as opposed to a small step back. I think your Lions are definitely headed in the right direction. Nothing wrong with the so-called Patriot way. I like to refer to it as good old-fashioned hard work and consistency, and I think that will help the Lions improve, and I think they're right in the mix this year, but I think it'll put them in the mix for a long time to come, as long as they find a suitable replacement to Stafford when the time comes and don't revert back to the Joey Harrington days and the good old times.
Goodness, like right when she gets rolling, she puts like lemon juice in your drink, like it just makes everything sour. Everything was going good, and
just
and
to remind you that they are still the Lions, just so you don't, because I know you. I mean, listen, like I said, I have a soft spot for them. I was out in Ann Arbor during the 0-16, 1-15 Joey Harrington years, things like that. I just love Detroit. I love Michigan as a whole, so. I do want to see them succeed. I like Matt Patricia, but they are the Lions. And I just want to temper your expectations and keep, you know, remind you of that so that you're not as heartbroken as I have seen you in the past, because I consider you a friend and I'm just trying to help you out.
She's brutal. She's brutal, people. She's seen my boys play, and she's seen us win when we were together. So every time she's seen my boys play, we were together, we won. So at least I could call her my good luck charm. She's trying to be funny now, but it's okay. I laugh when we
not, you want to hear what a good – I am such a good luck charm for you in that I am 0-3 at Lambeau Field during the Brett Favre era when – they did not lose at home. That's why I stopped going to Packers games. My grandfather had season tickets and was a hardcore fan, and I just love Brett Favre, watching him play football. And I used to have friends at school who were Lions fans who would call me their good luck charm, because who goes to Lambeau during that time and sees the Packers go 0-3? In one of the games they played the Giants, Brett Favre played maybe – 3 series and then got hurt. So you definitely want to keep me around if you're a Lions fan, that's for sure.
Okay, well I know where I'll be Monday night. I'll be at Aaron's house watching the game Monday night. And it's funny that you talk about, like, Brett Favre's situation. I was at the Brett Favre game up against the Giants where Strahan had the sack record. I was at that game, and let me just tell you this so we can move to the next topic. It was bull crap. It was a total bull crap record for Strahan. Brett Favre was on a complete fire. There was nothing the Giants could do. He was getting the ball out quick. He was making every throw. They were beating the Giants handily. It was a fourth quarter play with, like, I want to say, like, 2 minutes, maybe 1 minute. He said hike, slowly trotted to Strahan's side, and everybody kind of went out the way and let Strahan just tackle him for the sack. It was like, wait, he's really going to give him this record like that?
Another name in that record book, good or bad. You know Favre, good or bad, he'll take it. Breaks the touchdown records at one time, great. Interceptions, no problem. The more they talk about him, the better.
Yeah, but right now with all of these big boy quarterbacks with Breeze and Brady, they are cleaning up like bomb squad members, like, and looking how Brady just knocked Peyton down, the number three. Brady's number two on the passing yard list right behind Breeze, and they're about to eclipse him for the touchdown record. I think Brett Favre will probably hold that interception record by himself unless Eli gets behind center some more and throws some more interceptions. I think that's the only way that may potentially continue to go down. So
absolutely. No, I think that's one he'll be able to hold on to securely.
Right. No, nobody wants that record, but you can have it.
No.
Okay. Right. Let me ask you an interesting question. Thus far in the NFL season, what has surprised you so far?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, I'm trying to figure out, I don't know if this is as much of a surprise, but, you know, with this new pass interference rule where they're allowed to challenge it, which that's, again, we could go down a long road on that. It's interesting that of the challenges, 20 of the 21 challenges made by coaches challenging pass interference have been unsuccessful, meaning that only one time this year has a flag been thrown where the coach wanted a review on pass interference and the pass interference call been overturned and pass interference awarded. So I guess my surprise is just how quick they were to, I thought it was kind of a hasty reaction to what happened last year. They make a rule and it just doesn't seem to be working out. I don't think people understand it. You know, it's pretty expensive losing a timeout. And just the NFL seems to have left the officials and the coaches to figure it out. And I'm just surprised that they are not doing more to kind of clarify that. And I guess just all the penalties in general is just, where is this going? And it makes me nervous. You know, is the game going to change so much that we're not going to recognize it? And I know that's nothing new, but, you know, they've had to have meetings because the officials were calling, holding the incorrect way. We don't know what a catch is, you know, what's considered a football movement and stuff like that. And I guess I'm just surprised that this is still such an issue that I don't know where we solve it, what we do. You know, the officials are human beings. They're going to make mistakes. But I guess aside from the kickers is just how much penalties have become a topic of conversation during the games, after the games, and, you know, how even the players and coaches are so outspoken about not really knowing what's what anymore. And just it seems like we're kind of headed for disaster with that. So I was just curious what you thought about that.
It's kind of, to me, it's like, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right? And I agree with them trying to bring the rule out and trying to get coaches to have to further investigate if there's a penalty or not, or if there's smoke, there's fire type of situation. But the reason why I'm frustrated with it is because I think the referees or the people in the front office don't want to be shown up. Like, they don't want to feel like they missed the call. every one of those, I want to say every one of those 21 or, you know, 20 calls that went down and didn't go the right way, there had to be some type of friction where they had to go investigate it. And they don't want to be shown up by anybody on the sideline or any coach getting ready to call them out. Because if you've seen the Cowboys game, you just seen what Jason Garrett did to the referee. He spiked his red challenge flag, and he ended up getting a 15-yard.
I know, that was hilarious.
Right. And it was funny. Like, it was funny, but it's like he's frustrated too. And I'm not the biggest Jason Garrett fan, but when they miss a call, especially while they're at home, and you know Dallas gets that home cooking in front of those referees and being in Jerry's world, and it didn't work out in their favor.
Oh, but that was a call challenging a catch, which that he was ridiculous. So, which I understand. And I guess that brings me to sorry, I was going to interrupt you and ask this question because I think it's important, is do you think that changes the game in any way? I mean, the game is meant to, it's obviously played at real time, real speed. And like I said, the officials are people and they're watching the game and they're making decision based on real time, real speed. And, you know, think about our everyday lives. And if we took everything and slowed it down to, you know, frame by frame and picked everything apart, I mean, how much time we would spend doing just that, you know, overthinking, overlooking, overanalyzing. And I just think I'm concerned. I think right now we're okay, but the way it's headed is, you know, because now it's, like I said, there clearly is a big misunderstanding with this pass interference rule. They didn't explain it clearly, or there's some sort of miscommunication. But what's the next rule that they're able to challenge? And then, like I said, then they're no longer really relying on human officials. You know, we might as well have computers out there and coaches just throw flags and look at the review. And so do you think that changes the game at all, or do you think that makes the game better because, yes, you are correcting things that would have otherwise been mistakes had we not had the opportunity to review it?
And I ultimately think that it won't change. Every time that they'll review a call, unless it's blatant, the only way that they'll make it happen is if it was that same type of call that it was in that NFC Championship game up against the Rams where Drew Brees made the pass and he completely knocked the player out. And that ball was nowhere near being there on time. And I think that's ultimately what the front office made and said, you know what, we got to try something to make this right. Because this is the second year
in a row.
So you're
saying it's up to the coaches, basically. You're saying it's up to the coaches to understand, like, it's important, or that, I guess, I see your point now. What you're saying it's a good thing is that they're not going to overturn every little minor thing. Oh, he did put his index finger on him 7 yards out instead of five, but it's there to prevent something egregious like what happened last year where it could directly or did probably impact the winner of the game. So I guess what I'm saying is then by what you're saying, I interpret it, then it's on the coaches to not get, I guess, greedy or, you know, again, to understand what the rule's there for. It's not for minor tiny adjustments or minor misses. It's there for really egregious penalties, and it's up to them to learn to keep the flag in the pocket, save the timeout, and understand that they're not going to overrule it just because they think it's pass interference.
Somewhat like that. I really just feel like I know that more or less the referees are not going to want to be showing up and missing a call because they don't want to admit to human error. They're human, and just like you said, they might have to come out with computers, so on and so forth. I don't want to see the game come to that. It's already bad enough that they're making this game turn into two-hand touch, and I sound archaic, but I'm missing the viciousness. I'm missing the crackback blocks. I'm missing all of the stuff that was the yesterday NFL that they're trying to save face because of, you know, the CTE issues and everything that happened with concussions and so on and so forth. So I understand that. I respect where they're coming from. It was a $1 billion lawsuit that the league ended up losing. You know, they have to take care of these players, so they have to make the game safer. So I definitely understand where they're coming from and not trying to be one up, if you will, across the board.
And I do see your point, and it makes sense. I just hope that, you know, like you said, it doesn't go any further. And They just stay in place to kind of protect the integrity of the game and hopefully to make sure the deserved team wins the game. And like I always used to say, like I said, I've been a coach, the officiating goes both ways, and you're going to be at the receiving end of some bad calls or some unlucky calls just as many times as you're going to be on the opposite end. And, you know, it all balances out ultimately anyway, hopefully.
Okay, well, throw one more dish at me because we're doing real good. I like this, man. I'm telling you, Sports City, she's comfortable. She's doing real good, man. This is a good back and forth, too. Well, give me another dish that we can chop up.
Okay, here's something I've been thinking about lately that I used to think of differently. But I have a thought.
I'm not sure. Aaron, are you still there? Can you hear me? We may be having technical difficulty. I'm not sure what just happened, but hopefully I can get her back in here. Hopefully she's okay. This has been going great. I know this was a topic that she wanted to address because her son is actually playing ball. And I think I have
you there, Ty?
Aaron. I got you now. I got you back here. Okay, great. Okay, so get back at it. What you said, this is a topic that you wanted to address.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't know where I got cut off, but you were right on the money. So, you know, something I've started thinking of and looking at in a different way in light of the recent Vontaze Burfict situation. Just a little background. I have a son. Ty has met him. If you have ever seen a child that was born to be built to play football, it is my son. He's seventh grade, just turned 12, and 6 feet tall and a solid 218 pounds. We were at the doctor yesterday, actually, whom I had not let play football up until this year. We recently relocated from Florida back up here to Connecticut and decided to let him play. I do have concerns, but he's been loving it. It's been great for him. However, this past Sunday, he took his first really, really nasty, hard, awful hit. And, you know, I expect that it's part of the game, and I know it's going to happen. It's something I'm going to have to get used to. I don't know if I'll ever get used to it, but something I'm going to have to learn to live with. However, the difference was this came on a very dirty and cheap block from behind. The game was over. It was my son's team was down a touchdown, and they were driving last minute of the game. No timeouts. Unfortunately, the quarterback threw an interception, and the opposing team had a direct line to run it back to the end zone. My son and the rest of his teammates were still hauling it as fast as they could down the field. And my son's about 15 yards back, and out of nowhere, this kid runs up behind him with all his force and just shoves him forward. My son was not going to catch the ball carrier, nowhere near the play. There was no, I saw it on video. It was intentional. It was targeted. And you can imagine 220 pounds running full speed, flying through the air and landing very hard. And he hit his head. Thankfully, he is okay. You know, he was very sore. He was shaken up. A lot of people were. And it just really got me thinking about the Vontaze Burfict situation. And it really, to be honest, kind of changed my point of view on it. Because I was one of the people that originally thought the suspension, and Ty, I think we might have talked about this, I thought it was a little bit harsh. You know, I understand his history and I understand he'd been warned, but, you know, they still have to keep it kind of in line with the rest of the league, and they can make it harsher, but I just thought it was too extreme, and perhaps they were targeting him. And then, you know, watching the film of what happened with my son, seeing a few more hits, thinking about it, you know, I now absolutely agree with the NFL. And I think that they should use this as an example going forward and really, really send the message that the nasty, cheap hits, especially hits like that where he has a running start, he can launch his body. You know, it's not something that happened in the trenches. And, I've never played football. I clearly love the sport, but I'll be the first to admit I'll never understand what goes on, between those players. But it's just a different type of nastiness and cheap hit. And we focus so much, like you said, on the CTE, on the awful injuries that happen and injury prevention. And I think that should be a huge focus, but maybe we should direct a little bit more attention and shed a little bit more light on some of those injuries that we can prevent, the unnecessary injuries, the injuries that come from cheap hits, the fights or the nastiness that occurs away from the ball that has nothing to do with the outcome of the play. Not to mention, this kid also took away a pick six from his teammate, and whether they're in seventh grade or a pro, that's a really big moment and something really cool. And all that happens is they throw a flag, the game's over anyways, and everyone goes home. And I'm thinking, maybe do we need to even put more emphasis and make harsher penalties for targeted hits or things like that? Or is there a way to, maybe try and cut down on those types of things? And I don't know. I just thought it was interesting how it changed, and just seeing how the player reacted after. He didn't take ownership. He didn't, come and say anything. And I just started thinking that if that kid had played for me, he would be sitting the next game. And if I ever saw behavior like that again, that would be it. I wouldn't want someone like that, an athlete like that, endangering others playing in my league. And can we start that young and send a message and really try and cut down on that type of behavior in the game?
I mean, it's a
or do you think it's a dangerous sport and they're asking for it? Because I understand that side too.
Well, it's a control violation, and I just, spoke about it a little while ago about that's what I am missing is the violence of the show. And the crazy part about it is like, one, that's not even a great block that the guy's doing if he's pushing Mike in the back and Mike fell forward on his face. Like, that's a block in the back, and let alone if it was a vicious situation and, it could have been a personal foul and he lost 15 yards or whatever. So everything that can be considered in that situation, I understand. But, you think about the crackback blocks and when everybody oohs and ahs and, we're thrilled and, so emphatic on loving the sport to that nature, but then you don't want to see anybody hurt because if they're laid out flat, motionless, you don't want to see them come out there with an ambulance and trying to pick these guys up and hopefully they're hanging on and able to get up and be able to do their naturally daily things and be responsive and responsible for whatever they need to do. So I definitely understand that notion. But then again, it's like just looking at Vontaze Burfict's situation, I understand the suspension and him missing games, but the whole season, I feel like that's a bit much because they had a play before the hit he had on Doyle. The hit he had on Doyle, he went helmet to helmet, but I don't think his intentions was to go helmet to helmet with the guy. Doyle being a 6'4" tight end, 6'5", and he crouches down to a 6'3", Vontaze Burfict. They're both meeting in a common area where they had ended up meeting. And you have people that are in the league that don't like Vontaze Burfict that are going to speak up and say, well, he doesn't deserve to be in the league because he has a history. I agree with his history, but this guy's getting paid $1 million to make the play. You mean to tell me, and I don't think he's this fast, but let me just set a speed for him. He's like, he runs a 4.5 or 4.6 40. Let me just say that. I don't know if he runs that fast of a 40, but I'll just say it, right? You mean to tell me that the GM and the owner are obligated and telling him willingly, we'll pay you $1 million, well, more than, he's getting more than $1 million a year. But let me just say, we're going to give you $8 million a year to make every play on the freaking field. You mean to tell me that
he's
not going to go out there
this year,
and start laying everybody out? That is just like, you know, like I said on the previous show this week, the movie The Program. I don't know if you've seen it, but it was a movie called The Program.
Oh, great movie. Yep.
And
Mac
didn't have an education. He had a fourth grade education in college, but his goal was he had a door knocker. It was a gold door knocker, and all his goal was to do was to get his grandmother a house to go with the door knocker. And you mean to tell me that he's not going to do everything on his field to lay everybody out, knock snot bubbles out of people's nose, and do this, that, and the third? They're going to do it. Accomplish the goal. And Vontaze Burfict, I hold him into the same light. He's going to do whatever it takes to get this guy to the ground to make sure that this guy doesn't score a touchdown. But looking at his
See,
list,
I agree with that. I'm not saying get rid of the violence. I agree 100% with that argument there. That is what you signed up for, and that's, you know, he had taken a couple tough hits earlier in the game, and the first thing I said to myself is deal with it. This is what you signed up for. This is the nature of the sport. So I'm all for, you know, like I have, you know, nostalgic feelings for the past and the days I grew up. You know, I was born in Chicago on that Ditka Bears defense and being in New York and Lawrence Taylor and all of that. And I'm actually, as much as I love Brady and you know, amazing or not, he is 42, and I do hold my breath every time he gets hit, but I think that the has changed the game. They do need to allow some of those violent hits. They need, you know, they cannot treat the quarterbacks fine. You want to have some adjustments, but they're football players, and people need to be able to hit them, and you're hearing players talk about how they're approaching quarterbacks, and it's thinking as they're in the process of trying to sack this guy, oh, don't go too high or don't go too low. And I mean, you ask me, that sometimes leads to more injuries, or, you know, people overthink, and that's when bad stuff can happen. I'm talking about and not even Vontaze Burfict going in making a tough, hard tackle like he's paid to do. I'm talking about the guys that go after players, you know, it's 15 yards away from the ball, or the play's been whistled and they go low, or they take a cheap shot. And just, is there a way to have, you know, just a zero tolerance policy on that? That's what I'm saying. I think that's what changed my mind on the Vontaze Burfict thing is, to me, the second hit, I agree with you. The first one is football, but the hit in question, and unfortunately, given his history, it's hard to give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, the player was on his way down on his knees, and it looked like it was a conscious decision to kind of launch into him, and it was completely unnecessary. And luckily, no horrific injury was, took place. But again, it just, there's no right or wrong answer. It's really hard to, you know, discuss even in an hour show, but it's just, I think we could stand to focus a little bit more on those types of plays, the injuries resulting from that, and not be so sensitive, like you said, to the controlled aggression and controlled violence that is part of the game and the injuries that come as a result, because I think we sensationalize them so much, and people have forgotten that, you know, guys back in the day were getting concussions, were getting their knees ripped up, were, you know, and yes, they had long-term effects, but they knew that, they signed up for that, and people are forgetting that that's the game. It's not become more violent. It's not anything. It's how it's supposed to be, and we either need to accept it and, you know, take the good with the bad, or, you know, like you said, it makes me nervous for the direction we're headed, which seems to be flag football or two-hand touch.
And ultimately, I joke about it and saying that it's going to be either flag or two-hand touch. I would never want it to see be put to that situation, but you got to think about it like this. And I love to put, well, not to say I love to, but I this is something that I harp on using in my argument toward it. You mean to tell me that let's just look at the players of tomorrow, right? And these are the guys coming out of high school and college, right? And you want them to be Division I athletes, right? And they finished their 4 years of college football and so on and so forth, but whatever sport they're playing, but we're looking at football at this point in time. You mean to tell me that we are going to invite you to the combine? We want you to get bigger by doing a 225-pound bench press. We want you to get stronger by doing that same bench press, and we want you faster to go through the tunnels, the shuttle, the 40-yard dash, whatever you may do to impress these guys while you're being put on a soapbox or pedestal to be proven as one of our top athletes, and then go out there to earn a living, to do something that you love. And then when you have a, let's just say, a 4.3 speeded athlete going into a 4.5 linebacker, and they're both going to run into the same point of contact, something major is going to happen. These guys are bigger, stronger, faster, including the
exactly.
running back or the wide receiver that's trying to get there. So it's going to be an ultimate collision, like me, and I'm glad it's you that I get to talk to. Because me being a Lion fan, it hurt me the worst, I want to say, 7 or 8 years ago, watching a running back named Jahvid Best. A lot of people don't remember him because he had a short NFL career. And this guy was amazingly fast, and like, anytime he sees
super
a pinch
talented.
Of grass, which was daylight, he was gone. But it was one game that they played up against Minnesota in Minnesota, and he got to the sideline, and they hit him. I think it was Navarro Bowman. Shout out to Navarro because we have him here on the show. And Navarro tackled him, and his head hit the, you know, his turf up there. And he never played football again. And he ran a 4.3 high, 4.3 40, and Navarro ran like a 4.4, and they both met at the same time, and that was the end of Jahvid Best's career. And he only played like 4 or 5 seasons, and it's like
I don't think he's. And I respected him at the time. I remember thinking, how got you know? I think I can't remember. I'm about the same age, but respected him for making that decision. It's a tough decision and a smart decision and the right decision. Probably one that not many guys who are 24, 25, 26 and facing millions and millions of dollars. So I applaud him for, you know, thinking long term and looking long term. I don't know if he had a family at that point in time or anything, but clearly, you know, he was a smart guy who understood that there was more to life than football, but it is. It's so tough to watch, and it's a big reason why one of the tougher decisions I've ever had was whether or not to have my son play football, knowing that it's, you know, something that he's probably going to be good at, and I knew he'd love it, because it's I understand. I know enough about the sport. I don't care what kind of helmets you get. You know, Kevlar pants, bulletproof vests, whatever you put on these kids or these guys, like you said, you have these, you know, and by the time they get to the combine, as someone who, you know, I know a lot of guys who have played, I've trained with them, I've seen them, I know what they do. I mean, it is so scientific these days. It is unbelievable. Such a small fraction of the process is actually working out in a gym or actually playing football. You know, they know what kind of food these guys should eat, whether this guy needs more chicken or more steak or more broccoli. They know, you know, they dissect their blood, their oxygen, everything you can think of. So they're tailored to be the absolute best of the best in peak condition. You know, like DK Metcalf, I didn't think it was humanly possible to have, what did he have, like 1.7% body fat or something like that, running low fours in the 40. Yeah, it's going to happen. And that's what I'm saying. People need to remember that, and people need to accept that and stop trying to change it. And then maybe those are the people that can focus that time and energy on doing what they can to make sure you have the right types of players playing the sport, that you don't have guys out there headhunting and things like that, because I'm sure there are guys that do that. And It's horrible. And teaching these kids how to play, how to tackle, how to do it the right way, you know, not emphasizing, oh, it's about being the biggest or the strongest or winning. You know, when they start in third and fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh grade, focus on the fundamentals. Stop getting, you know, get coaches who are really trained. And just like you want your kids to have a very, very good teacher in third grade, and it's critical to them moving forward in their education, the same goes for coaches. And I think that, you know, they were on the right track for a while. It seemed like they really started to focus on teaching proper form, teaching fundamentals, teaching how to tackle, field awareness. I think that's another thing, is players don't seem to have that anymore. So they're not as aware of what's going on around them or the surroundings on a field. And it leaves them more open and more vulnerable to hits and things like that. But it's something that it's part of the sport. It's a violent sport. And, you know, as you mentioned, I'm big in the fight world and have a lot of experience with that. And it's the same thing. So I think that, it would be nice to kind of see the narrative behind that change a little bit.
Well, here we have it, Sports City. I mean, we got an hour down, so we are going to close up here. And now you get to hear what she's about, Sports City. I gave roundabout of where she can go. She actually put plates out for me to eat, so this is great. We will be back here next Friday, Aaron. I need you to give me a plug, anything that you like to, you know, shout out, anybody you like to know before we get out of here and shut the doors here in the kitchen.
Well, just speaking of my little man, Mikey, or Michael, the New Canaan 7th grade red football team, has a big game tomorrow. They're playing our big-time rivals, the Darien Blue Wave, at Darien at 10:30. The team's had some tough injuries. Like I said, came out of a real tough game last week. And just wish them the best. And like they say in Ann Arbor, you can have a rough season, but if you go and beat Ohio State, your season's a success. So same thing to those guys. Go out there, beat Darien, and the rest is gravy. Thanks for having me, though, and look forward to doing it again soon.
We will be back here next Friday if everything permits the right way. It'll all be on your end. But see, karma works Karma works in mysterious ways, Sports City. She picked on my Lions. I get to pick on her Wolverines. You better know that you are the Wolverines. You have not seen Ohio State, whether it was in Columbus or in Ann Arbor, in decades, or at least a decade. I don't want to say decades, but it's close to being decades with an S. Like,
bring it on,
that.
Buddy. Bring it on. To be, you know, nice tonight, being my first time and all, but.
Hey, it's okay. No, you give it to me. I'm going to dish it right back. Listen, this is the kitchen, doggone it, so I'm going to have a little fun. But this is great. I had a great back and forth and a rapport with her, man. And y'all get used to it. Hopefully I can get her on more shows. Hopefully I can get her to the brunch. If she's open Sunday morning, we can get her picks and see how she feels about the games for Sunday, at least for week 6 upcoming. But stay tuned. I'll try to get her in here.
I think it's about time y'all got a female's point of view.
Yeah, it was here, like we had callers, like female callers, but now, like, we got a host here, so this is great. So I know we got to get people to eat this up and get the word out that Aaron is in the building, that's for sure. Stay tuned, Sports TV. We'll be back here Sunday morning with the brunch, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, with the Notables as well as myself. On that note, tell a friend that it's the chefs again, and if they don't know, now they know.